Hey America,
start listening now.
Guys, so I got an email.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they were supposed to send it to me, but it's got all of the details about the location and stuff for next year's Eurovision.
In the Netherlands.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, but look, you can't tell anyone.
Oh, the city.
Okay?
It's all right. Nobody listens to this podcast anyway. So.
That's true. You guys, we're going to... Isn't that crazy, you guys?
Whoa.
I know.
Oh, man.
It's wild. Well, anyway, we're 12 points from America. We're a Eurovision podcast from America, Canada's pants. I'm Eric.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Danny.
You're so enthusiastic about that,
Danny. That's all. I'm Danny. This week we are talking about not where the Eurovision Song Contest is going to be held, because we still don't have any damn news about it. We are going to be talking about an old friend, a dear friend...
Our former colonial overlords.
The United Kingdom.
Ah.
Yes. It's going to be a long... They have a long and storied history. And sometimes the story is great.
Mm.
Like Ernest Hemingway. Sometimes the story is bad.
Like Ernest Hemingway.
In current events news, though, we have a little bit more information about that horrible Eurovision movie that Netflix is foisting upon us.
It could be horrible. It could be great. It could be horrible.
It'll be one of those three, for sure.
Yeah, we have a little bit more information on some casting for the Eurovision movie that we're sort of morbidly curious about.
I believe it will be called Eurovision, and then in parentheses, 2020, because that's the year, which is not to be confused with Eurovision 2020. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm expecting that to be better than the movie.
Well, we've got some pretty interesting casting news. We've got Demi Lovato, pop star extraordinaire.
That's only half a Lovato, too.
Yeah, it's a Demi Lovato. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jesus.
Is it the top half? Top half, bottom half.
It's the top half. The top that you can shoot on screen.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
The half that sings.
Yeah. Oh. The half that they showed of Elvis,
mm-hmm.
too.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Good, good.
Yeah.
Well, she's playing a singer, an Icelandic singer named Katjana, which will be
I will have to say that tracks for a Eurovision name.
I've got that part.
You would tell me that,
right on.
That the act for Iceland going to Eurovision 2020 was called Katjana, I would not bat an eyelash.
No, that tracks true. In other casting news, playing a character named Alexander Lemtov.
Let me guess, Sacha Baron Cohen.
If only. Oh my God.
Who is it?
Dan Stevens. Who is
Dan Stevens name? From Downton Abbey.
From Downton Abbey. Also plays
Matthew Crawley.
The Beast and the Prince in the most recent adaptation of Beauty and the Beast.
Or we can just stop with Matthew Crawley. We can do
yeah,
in Legion, too. He's in Legion.
Legion, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Decently well-known actor.
And Keanu Reeves is going to be playing Yanou Lasan. That's not true. I lied. I'm sorry.
Wishful thinking.
Nah.
Wishful.
The Keanu Reeves Lasan is alive,
mm-hmm.
and powerful.
In Eurovision.
He cannot be.
Iceland and potentially Russia are now taken, but what country would Keanu Reeves sing for? Like, what? Who would Dogstar be representing?
Oh, no. Oh, I forgot about Dogstar.
How could you forget about Dogstar?
In the vast ranks of Hollywood stars who have bad music projects, I mean, foremost at the top of my mind is always Jared Leto, because 30 Seconds to Mars sucks. But also, there's Bruce Willis with whatever, The Return of
Bruno.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what I always think of. But
what about 30-odd foot of grunt?
Oh,
what is that?
That's Russell Crowe's
band.
That's
Russell Crowe's
band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
boy,
they're Australian.
Oh,
they could do Eurovision.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Send Russell Crowe.
30-odd foot of grunt. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. But I had
30-odd foot of points.
I had forgotten about Dogstar.
Yeah.
Oh.
Fun fact I just learned about Dogstar.
Yeah.
Weezer's first gig ever, opening for Dogstar.
Oh, I knew that.
I did not until very recently.
That's like a fun little tidbit.
So we owe Dogstar a debt of gratitude, in my opinion.
For bringing us
Weezer. Yes.
Yeah. The answer, though, is Cypress.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, Cypress?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think he could brood well to the camera and, you know, be some sort of, you know, I'd be down with that.
Yeah.
San Marino.
Yes.
San Marino.
Yeah.
We can
yeah.
do that. That'd
Duet
be...
with Serhat?
Valentino.
Yeah, I broke the show.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, at least we have to mention Serhat at least once per episode.
I wonder if we're getting a lot of hits just because of all the Serhat chatter we've been giving.
It's got us on some FBI lists, I'm sure. Only other bit of Eurovision news I saw, and this is just a minor... I mean, these sorts of things are kind of formalities at this point, but we start to get a few more countries confirming that they will be back. We have getting close to 30 countries now, something like that.
Let me double check. I mean, granted, there is a deadline that countries can withdraw or jump in without...
It's not even until, November?
But at this point, it looks like we've got about 28...
Okay.
Confirmed. With many more.
Hold my
breath
until we get to the high 30s. That seems to be where it's settling. Yeah, or the low 40s even.
About 40.
Yeah, numbers around that.
The new one as of the last day or so is Belarus.
That's Belarus, right.
Will be back.
That's good news.
And you know what I say about them.
Don't do it.
He said the thing.
It's been a good show, guys. And that's our take in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Well, that does. Are there any other countries that we like that will be coming back?
I mean, we're getting a little bit more information on Portugal, especially about the Canção. I mean, they're probably following a pretty similar format to what they've done the last couple of years, having a sort of songwriter-focused competition.
Sure. Portugal switches it up every year.
No, Portugal. They have a national final. This national song festival in Canção that since they've come back to Eurovision in 2017, they've kind of done this songwriter
first.
Come
back.
Wow.
That's me. That's my stretch for the week. Good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Portugal's no Portugal, and we're happy to have them.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yes.
The United Kingdom.
Britain.
One of the most united kingdoms.
Wow.
Someone said.
Yeah.
Just ask Scott that question.
Four constituent countries, several Channel Islands, the Island of Wight, the Isle of Guernsey, Isle of Jersey, then we got the Isle of Man, then we got the Shetland Islands, all the way up top, all united in one kingdom.
We love you, Dan.
Don't let me forget, constituent countries, come to the Isle of Man.
In three easy payments of 1995.
One for each leg of the Triskelion.
That's right. So it seems like the United Kingdom's history in Eurovision is varied.
Yeah.
But overall, maybe let's start with the big picture.
Is that they're one of the greats.
True.
I think we can
say it's fair
to call them one of the greats
of
all time.
Yes.
They've won five times. They have finished, this kind of blows my mind, they have finished in exactly second 15 times.
Yes.
That's a little under a quarter of all of the contests.
It's a little bit easier than it sounds, though, I think, because of all the times when it was only like 7 or 8 countries in Eurovision.
Sure, but...
Especially at the beginning. But to maintain...
15 times.
15 is outside of that realm. So
yeah.
It is quite impressive. Yeah. I will give that.
They also hold the record for most top 10s. They finished in the top 10 41 times. Again, for a lot of this, there were fewer countries, but still 41.
It's incredible.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And 20
number of years that the contest has been going?
65-ish?
Approximately.
Yeah.
And the UK has participated 62 times.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they?
They were not at the first competition. Supposedly they missed the deadline to submit a song in 1956.
Those Brits.
I know.
The producers of Doctor Who rolled out of bed and were just, oh, God, we forgot!
Oops. And they also were out in the 1958 contest. So supposedly there was some sort of an issue with some artistic unions and they couldn't get some agreement. So they fell through in the 58 contest. But they came back in force in 59, coming in second 3 years in a row. 59, 60, and 61. So, yeah.
Yeah. 29 top 5 finishes. So about half of the times they've entered, they've been in the top 5. So even with a smaller field, that is especially impressive. That's also a record. That is really something. That is quite the history. Their most recent win was in 1997 by an act that is, especially for a Eurovision winner, unusually familiar to an American audience.
That's Katrina and the Waves.
Katrina and the Waves.
Yeah, I like that one by that point.
That
is Love Shine a Light.
Indeed.
I only remember it because I hate it.
Let's play a clip.
Yay. Oh, yeah. Love Shine a Light. It is just the right amount of multi-fermented cheese to win Eurovision in the late 90s, I suppose.
All right.
It's fine. It's inoffensive.
Sure.
It's mildly offensive in its inoffensiveness, perhaps.
In my opinion, though, and I feel like this is going to become a recurring theme for this episode, is that that song, despite winning, kind of emphasizes and encapsulates everything that is that cheese of Eurovision that people don't like.
But that's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's kind of the image that a lot of people still have.
That they have, exactly,
yeah.
They have of Eurovision.
Yeah, it's like, this is a formula that worked, you know, now 22 years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not working anymore?
Yeah.
When I was only somewhat familiar with what Eurovision was, that is definitely the sort of song that I pictured, for better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
It still seemed interesting. I liked all the, you know, the stats and the numbers and the Olympic-iness of the whole thing, but the music wasn't necessarily super enticing.
I love
and that's not
about Eurovision Song Contest, except for the song contest part.
Yeah.
The contest is fine. It's the songs that were like,
yeah.
Now, since Katrina and the Waves,
mm-hmm.
I gotta say, it's been kind of a different story.
Yeah.
In the last decade or so, in particular, has been...
Was Gina G before or after?
Gina G was the year before.
Just the year before. Okay, because there's a song that I felt should have won.
And it only came in eighth place.
Only came in eighth.
Yeah.
Well, my taste has never quite lined up with Eurovision,
but the thing is, this is also, like, pre-televote.
Oh, I always forget about that.
Yeah.
This
is early, early days.
How can I forgive them for glossing over ooh-ah just a little bit?
Ooh-ah
a little bit more. We just threw it to a song 1 minute ago, but here's another one! GDG!
Love
her. That's a club banger.
Yeah,
how
really
did it
is.
Not
like,
win?
11-year-old me is just like busting out of my skin. Like,
it was literally a club banger because I can remember that playing on like Radio Disney when I was a kid.
Oh yeah, that was actually a solid hit.
That was a hit here.
But
yes.
Nobody knew it was from Eurovision.
Yes.
It was just a song. Like, and Gina G isn't even British.
Where is she from?
Australia.
There they are, sticking their Southern Hemisphere tendrils up into Eurovision from the very beginning. And by the very beginning, I mean 20 years ago.
Yeah, but like right after Katrina and the Waves, the UK came in second on home soil, like
mm-hmm.
very, very close second place with Imani's Where Are You. A couple years later, they came in third place with Come Back by Jessica Garlic, 2002.
Jessica Garlic?
Garlic.
Are you saying garlic?
Garlic, yes. There's a K at the end of it.
Oh,
yes,
not interested then.
But like the year after a bronze medal finish,
mm-hmm.
they got their first last place finish.
Is that Gemini?
That was Gemini. Mm. Their first nul point.
First nul point.
Nul point.
To Gemini.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have to throw to this song, but
good.
I've never heard this song. Please describe this Gemini. What's the name of the song?
Crybaby.
Crybaby. By
oh
the
boy.
Band Gemini.
By
or
the band.
Singer Gemini? Artist Gemini?
A duet.
By the duo Gemini.
Yes.
What is this song like? This is 2003.
Upbeat pop about heartbreak and bad relationship that was very, very far away from their intended key.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So it was not that it was a bad song.
It wasn't
it was
the best song.
A poorly sung song.
Ding.
Ooh, boy. Ding.
Ding.
You know what we should do?
Yes.
Let's play a clip.
Let's...
needs to be said that 2003 was actually a really, really solid year. This is the year the Turkey won for the first time. Tatu was in it for Russia. You had some craziness coming from Austria's Alf Poyer. This is the Ukrainian debut, so a lot of attention was being paid to that.
Straight out of Dnieper.
Oh, yeah. But then you had the UK just kind of phoning it in with a song that wasn't as cohesive or...
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of pooped out there.
In the decade and a half since, have they had a real nice, solid song? Or even just, you know, quality of the song and taste and critique aside,
right.
has a UK song finished quite well in the next decade and a half.
We've only had one top 10 finish
yeah.
since Jessica Garlick.
Oh boy. All right.
And that was in 2009,
mm-hmm.
Jade Ewen's It's My Time.
Okay.
Which was this big showstopper kind of ballad. And when I say showstopper, I mean literal showstopper. It was co-written by Diane Warren and Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh,
oh boy.
All right. They just pulled him out of his golden-crusted crypt. And could you write a song for us, Mr. Lloyd Webber?
But it worked, though. Even though, technically speaking, Jake got whacked in the face halfway through the song with one of the violin players.
Well, okay, what was the staging like here?
Pretty girl in pretty gown walking downstairs, flanked by violinists and dude on piano. I'm trying to remember.
This sounds like Andrew Lloyd Webber right away.
Yeah.
This sounds like Starlight Express.
Yeah, basically. I'm trying to actually remember if... No, Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber appeared in the music video.
Oh, sure.
For the song, the promotional single. I don't think he was actually on stage in Moscow itself.
Oh, this is in Moscow.
This was in Moscow. 2009. So they went big. They went big.
I've got some numbers for you
yes.
on the following years.
Okay.
So that was their last top 10, 2009.
2009, okay.
In 2011, they finished 11th.
Good.
The best result since then, 15th place.
Oh, boy.
I have more numbers.
Yes.
Across the last 12 Europe.
So, including 2009. Yep.
The UK has finished 24th or worse 7 times.
So that's, they auto-advance to the grand final because they're the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just, they say, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Here's your Cracker Jacks.
So of those 12 performances, they finished last 3 times.
Did that include this year? Did they?
They were last this year, which I will maintain. I'm not saying
undeserved.
I'm not saying it should have been like
Deadlands.
Top half or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was absolutely not the worst song there, or the worst performance
right.
or whatever.
Right.
We all know who that is. So 7 of the last 12, they have finished 24th or lower, which is which is a rough run.
A real fall from grace.
Sam, I'm gonna
I have to say, actually, like, because last year I might just be a little bit biased because it was my first year. Mm-hmm. I thought that Storms by Sue Ree was not a terrible song.
She was lovely.
It was lovely. She was the one who got her performance interrupted by
yes.
that protester who was
yeah.
calling Margaret Thatcher a Nazi or something.
Something
very much like that. I mean, she was, but.
but she's dead now, and you can't, you know, that's neither here nor there.
But I liked that song. That song wasn't just, to call it inoffensive is kind of, like, a little bit mean, but, like, there was some actual, like, artistic effort put into that song.
Yeah.
And it was sung well. She was good.
She was a lovely singer, great performer, with, honestly, more Eurovision experience than
mm-hmm.
a British singer had at Eurovision in quite a long time, because she was a backing singer for Belgium twice. In 2015 and 2017, for Loic and with Blanche.
Danger Zone?
Danger Zone. Rap-up-up Danger Zone. That,
yeah.
She was there for all of that.
She's
wow.
been in the trenches.
She's been yeah. in the Belgian trenches, yes.
Because
yes.
she's a backup singer. She's
yeah.
got to be back there
yes.
in the dark. Remind me how well that did 2 years ago.
Surrey?
Yeah, Surrey. 24. Oh, my God. So, like,
yeah.
that's... Once
third
again,
third from the bottom.
I feel like that's a little uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like half of this
mm-hmm.
problem with the UK at the Eurovision in the last 2 decades has
yeah.
been kind of a flagging artistic quality. Like, there just hasn't been a lot of effort put into. And then also, I think they're just getting some bad luck sometimes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's tough. I mean, 2018, Surrey was 24th. 2017 was Lucy Jones's Never Give Up on You. That finished 15th. That one I feel should have done worse than it did.
I disagree.
You think so?
I think her vocals were very strong. I think that the UK had a lot more thought to the staging than they had normally done. If there was any detriment that I was going to say, it's that Lucy is a very visually expressive singer, which made for some awkward facial expressions in like still photography and screen caps and things like that.
That's too bad.
Yeah,
she should have been memeable.
She's a stage singer.
It's like Joe Cocker.
True. You gotta still have Joe Cocker. It wouldn't exactly be the most photogenic.
Yeah.
That's a bit much.
Drenched
but,
in
yeah.
sweat and his lip crawling down his neck. Yeah.
Yeah. 2016, I'm just going back a few more years. We had You're Not Alone by Joe and Jake. I liked this one.
This was sweet.
It was
yeah.
a fun
bro friendship song.
Yeah, yeah. Something that the Jonas Brothers might have put towards the end of one of their albums, something like that. But I kind of like that one. They added some extra harmonies for the live performance that were spot on. And I wish I could watch it, but I can't.
Geo-blocking.
But that one was cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a lot of these songs and we're saying, oh, they're not bad per se. I think the problem is that the UK, when they play it safe, you're not necessarily garnering votes. It's not necessarily a bad song. It's just a non-memorable song.
Yeah,
people aren't
yeah.
necessarily going to be inspired to pick up the phone and vote when there are more eye-catching, more energetic, more confident, not necessarily competent, but more confident performers out there.
Well, that's fair, but...
and it's a big
let's go back, and I cannot lie, let's go back one more year to 2015.
Okay.
And this was definitely not playing it safe. Mm. However, it's,
oh, I know it's coming.
It also finished in 24th place. So that's, for those counting, 3/24ths in a four-year span. This one garnered just 5 points, finished...
Oh, from both
televote
and jury.
Keep in mind, though, I mean, this is a different voting system. This is only one score rather than the
yeah.
two scores that they're doing now.
Okay.
They gained a couple places because there were two countries that got no points. But I am talking
for context,
about...
Who did the UK finish above?
France, Austria, and Germany.
Okay. Couple heavy hitters there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have England, 24th, with...
Still in Love with You yes. by Electro Velvet. I'm going to paint another one of my word pictures for you. So if you've read The Great Gatsby,
light it on fire.
The Great Gatsby, period, end quote.
Yep. It's visually, aesthetically, a Jay Gatsby party.
What I love about the video of this one is much like Sarahat, much like San Marino from this last year, we have a couple of singers who are kind of floundering on stage while the backup dancers just dance their heart out. Let's throw it to it. Don't walk on the red light. Don't stay out at midnight. Don't get in a fist fight. That pretty face can't be replaced.
From that clip, you've probably already formulated a pretty strong opinion one way or another about this song already. I will say, with apologies to our wonderful listeners in the UK,
who account for 90% of our readership
for now, that I hated this. It has elements of things I enjoy, but it was like combining Life cereal with a nice
beef stroganoff.
I was gonna say a carbonara.
Oh,
I don't know.
But that's, you know.
You know. Like, I like carbonara. I like M&Ms. I don't want them together.
Yeah.
Well, but they add a nice crunch.
Hang on.
No, stop.
Guys, I'll be right back.
No.
Anyway,
I
don't like this.
This podcast has voiced some very, very strong opinions before, and I feel like this is a justified one, Eric. I do.
M&M's and carbonara are a no-go.
Are a no-go.
All right, Sam, be honest. Electro Velvet, what do you think?
I like the fact that the UK were trying something different.
That's true.
That they were going all out. There are elements of this that I did like. I like that sort of electro swing kind of throwback, like Caravan Palace, a French
mm-hmm.
act.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of this gypsy jazz swing kind of new old. I love that sort of thing. I love the aesthetic of, say, a postmodern jukebox. And I think that's kind of the aesthetic that they were going for. And it just didn't connect.
They couldn't hire Caro Emerald.
But if Caro Emerald happened to sing for... I think she's Dutch.
But if she had been a part of this act, I think this might have gone... Like, that could have done very, very well.
They could get that guy from...
Caro Emerald's Dutch.
Ooh. Maybe we'll...
Ooh, I see where you're going with this. So when we're in that...
What else is happening?
In that city I told you about earlier,
that's
we could
right.
get... Okay,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Plot.
That's right.
They could get that...
When we're in Groningen.
What Electro Velvet was missing was that guy from... Gogol Bordello. That would have been wild.
Yeah.
Feel in love with you!
Yeah.
That's what we were missing.
So before we analyze and solve this problem for the UK, I have one other note, and I'm just going to throw it to Sam. I wrote this note, but I've already forgotten what it means. I just wrote scooch?
What is this?
Tell us about the Scooch, Sam.
Oh, 2007. Scooch was a pre-existing bubblegum dancey pop group that was formed in 98. So that sort of crest of wave of the dancing pop groups of Western Europe during that time.
That brief genre inspired by Aqua.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the Numa Numa people, like that. Yeah, oh, great.
They stopped recording for a while, and then they kind of picked up again just in time for Eurovision.
Just in time.
Yeah. They ended up making it to Eurovision with a song called Flying the Flag for You, which was all about flying all over Europe and entertaining.
We're still talking
people.
About the UK's song.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
And they were all dressed up as flight attendants? And a whole bunch of fantastically ribald double entendres. You know, would you like something to suck on for landing, sir?
Oh,
things like that. No, and,
right. You know, I'm having a hard time picturing this. I feel like we're going to have to play a clip.
Oh, no.
Guys, I'm sorry. I have a problem.
That's a slog. That sucks. The UK, the issue is that we want you to do good. And we know that you can do good. But you sent what amounts to a theme park song troupe to Eurovision, and it's... That's gonna haunt my dreams tonight.
That is a hook right there.
Oh god!
It's like if they designed the "It's a Small World" ride, but wanted to be absolutely sure that no one learned anything.
Yes, yes, that's quite nice. Yes,
thanks.
Yeah.
So
flying high in Amsterdam.
All right, we've God. All right, we've roasted the UK, and we're mostly sorry.
Yeah.
Here's the question. I guess I'm going to pose this to Sam, because Sam is the expert. Sam, what happened? What's the deal?
Honestly, it's a huge, big, complicated question, but I think a large part of it, we kind of touched on this, I feel like, in an earlier episode. Mm-hmm. I hate to put the blame all on one cause or one person, but...
Tony Blair.
Close enough. Terry Wogan.
oh, that is rather close.
I mean, I know I can't tell them apart. So
Terry Wogan is the person who presented Eurovision for the BBC?
Yeah, he was the BBC commentator for quite a long time, and...
I think I remember this. He just was like, he had no enthusiasm for it,
By the end, he was just panning it.
There was a point when he was more liked, or not really.
More adulatory and more loving of the content.
When did his tenure start?
Oh, okay.
In doing this commentary.
I
know that he's, you know, one of the grand old sires of British broadcasting, but...
From what I could tell, Terry Wogan started as a radio commentator as early as the 1971 contest.
Oh, okay, wow.
He started with the television commentator from 1973 and basically was involved in it almost every year since until the end of the 2008 contest. So you see your uncle every year at Christmas, and every year he gets a little bit more crotchety.
Yeah.
Until suddenly he's spouting stuff about Trump and Brexit. So I think a lot of, especially the casual viewer, tuning into Eurovision.
He was the lens through which most British viewers watched Eurovision.
Yeah.
And with not a lot of enthusiasm. I mean, what impetus does the BBC have to do well?
Right, exactly. It's like, nobody's going to vote for us because of this or that. You know, by the end, when Gemini came in last place, no points, a lot of people were saying, oh, nobody's going to vote for us. It's all political, which is always the mantra. It's all political. Because nobody's going to vote for us because of Iraq, because we're involved in the Iraq war. Even though it had nothing to do with it, they didn't want to admit that, no, we just didn't perform our song.
You had such a junk song.
Yeah, and it wasn't sung well. And people often don't want to...
The Iraq war was responsible for Gemini.
Well, I mean, people are using a similar... people aren't going to vote for us now because of Brexit. No, people aren't voting for you because there are better songs that people want to vote for more.
That are bigger than you, let's say.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bigger than all of us, some would say.
You know...
It's
like some countries bring a knife to a knife fight, and they end up mid-table. Some countries bring, you know, a bazooka to a knife fight, and they win the contest with a massive...
A yoinking bazooka.
Yes. The United Kingdom at this point are bringing a spork to a knife fight. And it's a shame.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, what's it going to take then? One thing that I think about sometimes, and I don't really have any particular basis for this besides just sort of anecdotally seeing that some of these countries tend to finish towards the bottom, is because they don't have to do anything to qualify for the final, there is perhaps an amount of extra effort that they just don't make.
Because they have to qualify.
Exactly. Like they're in for Saturday, they're in for the big show, and it doesn't matter how good the song is, they're just in. Mm-hmm. So do you think a country like the UK would do better if we didn't have the big five?
It's never stopped Italy.
Exactly.
Like, that's never stopped Germany.
I mean, Germany has their highs.
It has occasionally stopped Germany.
10 years ago, Germany was not bad at all.
No, I mean, Germany came in top five, fourth place, two years ago. So, you know, I don't think that the fast pass to the final is necessarily an excuse for countries to rest on their laurels. Mm-hmm. I think it's a deeper issue that a lot of more established, more confident artists don't necessarily want to take a drink from what they see as a poison chalice. That
is it, though?
For some people,
I think just for the Brit, I think this is a unique national situation.
Yeah.
I think this is micro, not macro. I think there's a lot of issues with the UK, with the BBC, with this culture that has been established
because of Britain's position in musical culture.
Perhaps.
Is Eurovision? I'm not stating this as a is this a factual thing, but from a perceptual thing. Is it beneath them?
For some people, they may think that it's either for, you know, again, this is all perception, not necessarily my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's for has-beens and never-wases.
How dare you call Lulu a nevus?
Don't get me wrong. My heart goes boom-bang-a-bang.
She boom-bang-a-bangs into my heart.
Love her. But that was the United Kingdom of a different era.
That's true. That's the 60s.
What I think it would need would be an artist to just say, F it, we'll give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. To someone who just
Sigma
goes,
be damned.
Hey, tell you what, I'm going to sing a good song, and I'm going to sing it well, and I'm going to go on TV doing it. Guess what? What a novel concept.
Right. But the BBC have tried it in the past with established acts, and they haven't necessarily gotten the success that they wanted. They, you know, sent
they
Blue.
They called out Engelbert Humperdinck.
But there was a thought behind it. The rationale was he's an established singer. He has a fan base. He's been a major name for decades. And people just weren't turning out and voting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Bonnie Tyler, which granted there were also the vocal issues that day, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
for her.
She should have turned around.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Held
out for a
better song.
Yeah.
Bonnie Tyler, if you're listening.
We do love you.
One, we love you. Two, please find something better to do. So, Sam, you had talked about an established act that isn't going to have quite the air of has-beenitude that Engelbert or Bonnie Tyler might have. Something that is hip and rad or whatever.
Whatever the kids are saying nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. Throw out a name. What do you think?
Who is hip and rad in the UK?
My thought is, again, what do you look for in a Eurovision song? You want something catchy. You want something that will energize a crowd. You want...
Accessible.
Mm-hmm. You want eye-catching. You want... people who will glom on to an act. My brain goes to churches.
Oh, that's right.
Mm. My brain will always go to churches.
That's a Scottish act.
Yeah, which the United Kingdom hasn't actually sent a Scottish act since 1988.
Wow.
Yeah. When he got beat by Celine Dion.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, there's no coming back
from
that.
Everyone can kind of scratch it that year and just go, all right, can we just send the same songs next year?
I would love to see. I mean, I think of a song like Neverending Circles, that pop electronic alternative, but still anthemic and uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And
That song specifically would kill at Eurovision,
I think. But again, would they ever agree to it? I don't think so.
There's probably more money in not doing it. I mean, that's the other thing. When you're an established act, Eurovision...
That's right. That's
you're basically booked for
a good couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're taking a half a year to book mm-hmm. to Eurovision.
It's not just Eurovision, but to one song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure is not for a lot of people, as we learned with...
who's it, Italy?
Francesco Cavani?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He did not like that song that everyone loved.
Well, I mean, he did like the song. He just was wanting to talk about other stuff by the time
mm-hmm.
his, you know, fourth month of working on it.
Yeah.
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 So what about you, Eric? You've got generally your finger on the pulse of musical sensibility. flexibility. So if you were to pick a British act to sing for the UK.
First of all, it's very kind of you to lie about me like that.
Aww. what are friends for?
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. First, it is really just a bit selfish, which is the 1975. I don't know that they would do well. In fact, when Lake Malawi went as the 1975 this year, they didn't do especially well. Having said that, they're one of my favorite bands, if not my favorite, like right this second. And I think it would just be very cool to have them there. I think they would bring something pretty interesting to the table. Another name that comes to mind for me is, I'm pretty sure he doesn't do music anymore, like at all.
Mm.
But when I was learning about Eurovision and kind of thinking about this hypothetical, when I was reading about how, you know, the UK isn't necessarily the powerhouse you would think they would be, is a singer named Darren Hayes. Darren was he's actually Australian for a long time, which, I mean, whatever. as we've established, Australians can win Eurovision for Brits in the past. And Darren was the singer of Savage Garden, who was late 90s outstanding pop group. He has an awesome voice, and when he embarked on his solo career, he lived in the UK.
Mm.
It seems like the sort of thing that he might have a passing interest in, just sort of in general. Again, I think he has since moved to LA and just doesn't do music anymore.
You can't call that music.
What?
It's a joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
the latest thing from Europe.
Could it possibly be something that you would imagine him being a songwriter for something?
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially, yeah. He seems like a decent fit to me. He certainly has the vocal chops to do any number of different sorts of songs. I don't know. I like it. I think that's a name that if they want to dig deep and get some recognition again, I realize this hasn't exactly worked for them the last couple of times I've tried, but I think Darren Hayes is still a bit of a ways away from Engelbert Humperdinck and what have you. So that's that. Danny, any names come to mind for you? What's your dream UK Eurovision artist?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay, moving on.
No, I mean, thinking of someone who actually do well, and this is actually someone who I've seen perform in person in terms of poppiness, catchiness, the length of his songs are actually very well, and they're very accessible. He's actually much more famous in the UK than he is in the US. It's George Ezra.
Mm.
I think that he would actually be a fantastic choice for Eurovision, because he, as someone who had been in the same room with him at First Ave, which is just like, you know, basically maybe 400 or 500 people, a little bit more than that, but he is very, very friendly. He's very beguiling. And then he'll just break into one of his songs, and it's fantastic. And he's just, you know, he has a simple backing band, and he plays the guitar, and he sings, and his songs are great. His songs are great. And he does not get the love in the States that I think he deserves.
You know, he already has a bit of a Eurovision connection.
Oh, no. Everyone does, don't they? Sam, please tell me. He's actually banned from Eurovision. That's the connection.
All right. So you know his song Budapest?
Yes, yes.
It's like probably his most well-known song.
Yes, Budapest is in Europe. That's the connection.
There he is.
yeah.
So he was supposedly trying to get to Budapest and was stuck in Sweden in transit to the city.
Uh-huh.
And he was stuck in Malmö as the Eurovision Song Contest was being held in the city.
Uh-huh.
So he actually was inspired to write Budapest about his experience watching Eurovision in Malmö on site.
That's it, UK. You gotta bring it. That's it.
Was like, Eurovision like the cause of the delay?
I'm not exactly sure.
Because that's like a rom-com plot.
Yeah.
I know. That's a very sliding door.
A man's love for his song contest.
That's it.
Yeah.
Will
Ferrell?
That should be the
it's
real plot
too,
of Eurovision.
Yeah, it's not too late.
It's not too late. Send it back to the script doctors.
So, I mean, you're not as far away as you think.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, when love it or hate it, in the UK, the show gets massive, massive ratings in the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's an underground sensation. People will have house parties and, you know, themed cocktails and bring out the ooh, it's actually really good. Excuse me, I'm going to make myself a Bellini. But people watch with enthusiasm and love. They watch with families. This is a major event. Last I checked, the 2019 contest had a 41.7% share in the UK.
What else was on? Everyone else is that or Hollyoaks? I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever was on.
It's a rerun of Bake Off.
But
that's the other sometimes. That's the other 58%.
No, Germany performance, switch over to Bake Off.
Yeah.
I'd do it.
Ooh, Kim Joy. I love me. Kim Joy.
Friend of the show.
Kim Joy.
We love you. You know, with ratings that high, it kind of begs the question, does the UK actually feel the need? I mean, not the UK. Does the BBC, as a broadcaster, really feel the need to bring it home?
True. If they're already doing this well, ratings-wise.
Yeah.
And without having to spend a ton of money.
Why do they need to try to win?
Right. I mean, I'm sure that point of view is absolutely infuriating to the armchair quarterbacks and to the Eurovision fans among us.
And this isn't to say that we're stating that they are trying to lose.
No, of course not. The return on investment that the BBC gets for participating in Eurovision, that's approximately 9 hours worth of really high-quality, must-see TV on the BBC screens every year. The amount of money that they would spend at Eurovision versus 9 hours of locally produced TV content, say a Strictly Come Dancing, an X Factor, a what have you, that is a massive bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm.
And hosting Eurovision, if they won, if they took it home, it's an amazing opportunity, but it's also a massive expense to put it on.
Well, but also, unlike other countries, London has a crazy amount of infrastructure that would make hosting it in, say, 5 cities no problem.
Oh, any one of 5 cities.
You'd exactly.
Not splitting it up in 5 cities.
No, that would drive us.
Speaking of somebody who has to commute to that kind of thing, that would drive me nuts.
No, but it's just like, you know, unlike, say, somewhere like Belgium, which is just restricted by how small it is, or somewhere like, say, Greece, which, you know, has a couple of major cities. London is littered with a bunch of stuff that's easy access by rail, has huge performing arts venues,
absolutely.
Has stuff that's ready for it.
Absolutely.
So.
Like, honestly, they've hosted it 8 times already.
Mm-hmm.
Only 4 of those were actually in London.
Mm-hmm. There's Brighton.
Yeah, the Brighton.
Manchester.
No, Manchester. So Brighton in 74.
Mm-hmm.
Just before that, Edinburgh in 72.
Okay, yeah.
Birmingham in 98. And Harrogate.
Harrogate?
In 1982.
I don't even know what that is.
Where is Harrogate?
What is a Harrogate?
It's in Yorkshire.
Okay.
Oh, well.
We'll host it in Leeds. Great.
They had a brand new performing arts center that
we'll host it in Torquay. Yay.
Scenic Belfast. Just to ruffle some feathers.
I would honestly put it in Northern Ireland. Put it in,
that would be cool.
Put it in Wales.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Put it in
they should put it in
Put North. It on the Isle of Man. Hosting in the Tynwald. None of our representatives will be convening this month. It will be all Eurovision. Coming to you live from a city in the Isle of Man.
Douglas, is that the capital?
Douglas. That's it. Live from Douglas.
What a nice young man.
Saturday night.
Hosted by a cat with no tail.
I'd watch that.
I would totally watch that.
Yeah.
Aw, you go, tailless cat. You go. So we're sitting here complaining and whining about, why is the BBC not putting their foot on the gas? But I mean, at the same time, the BBC is getting their money's worth. They're getting massive, massive viewership every year, you know, year in, year out, and they don't have to host it.
I will say that, and I can really attest to this as a fan of the Minnesota Timberwolves, that there is something to be said
about rooting for a constantly losing team.
For the lovable losers.
Oh. That's us.
We love you, UK.
Mm-hmm. We do.
The UK, the Minnesota Twins of Europe.
Yeah. And maybe send the 1975.
Yeah.
Or churches.
Hail waves.
You know, just send
the Beatles.
the Beatles.
A Beatle.
Not Ringo, though.
Oh.
Stuart Sutcliffe.
What's he up to?
I think he's dead.
Oh, very dead.
What? That just got awkward.
All right. We've talked it over.
Yes.
Do not send Stu Sutcliffe.
Do not send Stu Sutcliffe, the original bassist of the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
Do not.
All right.
If you have no other options, there is some name recognition.
I think for next year, I think UK, that's all you really have to go with is don't send the corpse of an Beatle.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
It can only go up.
From there.
From there.
Yes.
Don't send the corpse of Engelbert.
Yeah.
I think they already sent it once. The bottom of our advice for the UK.
I mean, you folks listening at home, if you've got any better ideas,
we would love to hear them.
I'm positive you do. Please let us know what you think. Send us a message. You can email us directly at 12.pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at 12pointsUSA. It's also where we are on Facebook. You can also reach Eric or I individually on Twitter. I'm at ESC Insider. Eric?
I am at Eric is tweeting. That's E-R-I-K is tweeting. And I am.
And I still don't have Twitter. And I'll never get one. I have a Tumblr, but you're not going to find it.
You're so defiant. But again, thanks so much for listening at home. We would love to hear what you think.
Yeah, if you've made it to the end of this one, I can't thank you enough. I really can't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've gotten to the end of the show and you happen to work for the Tunix organization...
Oh, please.
Please.
Friends of the show.
We love you.
Yes.
Send us.
We're out of tea cakes.
Some delicious tea cakes. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Until next time, folks. Hey, America.
Stop listening now.